Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor. My name is Ken Edwards, and sitting with me today is nobody. I think Phil is, if I'm not mistaken, Phil is on spring break in Florida, I think, having a good time and well-deserved. And Ed is out. Growing the Midwest Coalition of Labor as we travel around the country and expand. So today is you're going to hear from your one and only me, Ken Edwards, and I'm going to run my mouth a little bit about a couple of things, and then we're going to pivot and air something that I think is that you guys will really, really like, and that is we had a lengthy interview. You know, we recorded for the very first time in front of a live audience on March 1st, on Friday, at Cafe Bionda, which is in the South Loop on State Street. And it was really, really, really fun. So we recorded, we had Stu Clark from Premise, and we had Kevin McLaughlin, the new Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council, on. We had Ryan Whittingham on, and Phil, myself, and Ed were there. And there were lots of trades guys there, and lots of union folks, and just a ton of people. It was really, really fun. So that was our first time doing it. So we recorded, obviously, a full show, which you heard on Sunday. But what you don't know is we actually recorded a couple of segments or one lengthy segment with Jim Sweeney, President Business Manager of the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. And, you know, with Jim, it just the conversation goes where it goes. And we just let him go. And I think you're going to find it fascinating, his perspective on a few different topics. So we're going to air that today. So I'm going to kick it off with just really talking about a couple of things that I think are timely and important. And importance, by the way, I don't know if you noticed, a lot of people say important, and like they forgot that they say Manhattan, importance. Like that drives me nuts. Say important. Like actually, you know, sound it out if you have to. In any case, there was the State of the Union address, and obviously without getting into political weeds, I found it fascinating for a couple of reasons. And I zoned in, obviously, on the issue of working people and labor and jobs. And, you know, for the first time, you have a president that has consistently, this isn't like, you know, the foxhole prayer of getting ready for the election, but it's a consistent message of talking about workers' issues and insourcing jobs, like bringing back manufacturing and chip making and, you know, all of the green energy initiatives that they have, you know, solar. And he mentioned solar, but in the same breath, he literally said the words IBW. And then he talked about infrastructure and all the work that is, you know, roads and bridges and, you know, wind farms and all the utilities and replacing, you know, lead pipes so our kids don't get poisoned. And those are all ability trades work. I mean, that's construction jobs. It's millions of construction jobs, and it's jobs for a generation. And then, you know, he also said and had at the State of the Union address, he had Sean Fain from the UAW. And I don't know if I've seen a presidential candidate or president or anybody in my recent memory give a State of the Union address and actually point out a labor leader that was actually there. And so, you know, he did. And I thought it was fascinating. I thought it was heartening. And like I said, I'm not playing politics here. I'm just pointing out that there is somebody in the White House at the moment that is pro-American jobs, pro the American worker, and it seems to be kind of the antithesis of, you know, this corporate greed, which I'm going to talk about in a little bit. But you know, to have somebody, he gave the situation in Belvedere, right? Belvedere is right here in Illinois, and it's west of Chicago. And for years and years and years and years, there was a manufacturing plant there, auto workers, and I think it was Chrysler, if I'm not mistaken, and then Jeep, and then they were going to shut it down. We talked about this on the radio on WGN and the workers' mic here. We've talked about it last year when they were literally going to shutter this place, and the UAW, in their fight with the big three automakers, was able to keep that place open, and now it's getting retooled to do something else and providing for, you know, all those jobs that would have been lost. That's not going to happen. Those jobs are not getting shipped to Mexico, and you know, here we are. And he talked about that last night. I think he might have even had somebody there from Belvedere, from the plant itself. So I just found it heartening to hear, you know, a politician, any politician, by the way, any politician, whether you're a Republican, Democrat, talking about workers' issues, working class, building trades, construction, you know, fairness for workers, passed the PRO Act, he said, which is, you know, this pro-union act. I mean, he just pounded this and did it for a while in the speech. So I thought it was great. With that, we're going to take a break. Going to come back, listen to Mr. Jim Sweeney, President Business Manager of the Operating Engineers, right here on the Workers' Mic, 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megant Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor. I'm Ken. Sitting with me is Ed and Phil, as usual, and we are super psyched today. We're still at Cafe Bionda to have Jim Sweeney with us. Jim Sweeney is the President Business Manager of the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, which is my home local, as
mine
well
too.
As Ed's, correct? Welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming down.
Absolutely.
How's things?
Going well.
Is it?
Yes. I'm a grandfather by two, a month and a day apart.
Congratulations. Did you hear that, everybody?
Yep.
Jim's
come
a grandfather.
Proud.
Double grandfather, and then you got one more. You got one more in the hopper, or no?
No.
Okay.
The last guy is ducking this responsibility the best he can. He's pretty good at it too.
Is he married yet?
No.
So he's actually still having fun.
Oh, every day is the dream.
Shout out to Jimmy Sweeney.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. So, Jim Sweeney, you have been around labor for a long time. Like, how long?
A long time.
How long is a long time?
It's since 19, on staff since 1986, 87. 86, 87, right around there.
On staff with Local 150.
Yes. I've been a member of the operating engineers for 45 years this October.
Wow, 45 years. And do you come from an operator family?
Yes. My father was a crane operator. Came here from Ireland,
okay,
through England, to Philadelphia, and then from there to Chicago. And my mother came from Galway in Ireland and came around through New York, through the Bronx. She was a Dolan and into Chicago, and she came here by herself.
Really?
Yeah, at age 16.
Why'd she come to Chicago?
Opportunity. Family.
Yep. And so
the story of this city.
Oh,
really.
For sure.
Yeah.
And you're first generation American.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Your family is.
I'm the son of immigrants. Yep.
And so people are just blasting immigrants right now, and you know, just whatever. And we soon forget how quickly, you know, we quickly forget where we come from, right? Like, you know, my family's from Germany, you know, and so we're all families of immigrants, no?
Well, my kids won't forget. I pounded into them.
literally pounded
to give back.
Remember where you came from, right?
That's good. Right.
And you are the creator of the inflatable rat. Which everyone who's been around
go again.
The youth labor movement.
There's no bricklayers here, are there?
Don't matter. Scabby was birthed by us. Let's be honest.
Fair enough. That. And how was that? Everybody, for those of you listening
It started with a cartoon character on a picket sign, and then morphed into, we had the designers make rat suits.
I remember.
That quickly became a problem because of the odor that would accumulate inside those rats.
Organizers get gamey in the summertime.
Yeah.
Youngest guy's always warm.
Could be even more effective.
That's a low man job.
Oh, it's bad.
And then it became a balloon.
A balloon on a roof of a car.
Okay.
That then morphed into a bigger balloon. So.
And then morphed into a bigger balloon. And then morphed into
the Sopranos. When he hit the Sopranos, we were watching it, me and my wife, and I said,
"And for the
there's Scabby,
yeah. Oh, National,
yeah, that's right.
Scabby on top of it."
So not only did it morph into a bigger balloon, but it morphed into a First Amendment federal lawsuit, right?
Of course.
And if you remember that, that was Orland Park.
The effect that Scabby has on rat contractors still amazes me.
Why?
You just hate to be shamed like that, and Scabby does a great job at shaming them.
It's good. It's effective, yeah?
Yeah, very effective.
Especially in the city.
Anywhere. We're out in farm fields, middle of nowhere, and, you know, we'll have farmers attack them with knives.
That's right.
Scabby has been wounded and killed and
chopped up in a number of ways.
We've had a few.
Do you remember when Scabby got arrested?
Scabby did get arrested, and then about 5 or 6 other Scabbies and about 300 or 400 people showed up at the Orland Police and demanded the release of Scabby.
We had a free Scabby sign.
It was a free Scabby rally.
Scabby was released that day.
Yeah,
into
right.
Into the hands of Bill Dugan.
That's exactly right. He drove his Cadillac up there, got Scabby in the trunk. But here's the good thing. This is the impressive thing, guys and ladies and everybody that's listening. This is the impressive thing about Chicago labor, and that is, I remember this day to this day. I remember like it was yesterday. Scabby got arrested. We weren't going to take that line down, so we blew up rats in front of the police station, right? And
Orland,
said, "Hey, yeah, Orland Park, come on down and arrest
Orland?
All of us." Yeah, it was Orland Park.
It was the hero that saved Ronald Reagan.
The guy that took the bullet.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
We still haven't forgiven him for that.
Absolutely not. And so we blow up the rat, you know, and then all of a sudden we got 300-400 people there, and the Teamsters come down, and the carpenters come down, and the laborers come down,
all the trades were there.
Come down. They brought their own rats, and so we blew up all the rats. Like, okay, now arrest us all now. And like, okay, fine. Take your rat back. Go away. Please just leave here, because you're really lowering the value of our property. And so we all left, and we had a good time and whatnot. But then what we do a couple of weeks later, we sued for violation of First Amendment rights. And that's what we did. And said, you know what? You want to mess with us? How about this? We're going to sue you. And the very first line of that case, because we won, it says, you could easily dismiss this case because it's based on an inflatable rat balloon.
Right.
Except we're not going to, because it's a First Amendment case.
Correct.
And we won.
And we continue to win.
And we continue to win. We got our attorney's fees, too.
Yep.
Right?
Yes, sir.
This is the genius, I think, of Chicago labor and, you know, to be blunt with you, Local 150 and all the building trades here, is they're not afraid to, you know, we'll take it, but then we're going to push back and fight.
The labor movement in this town is second to none in this country.
Why do you say that?
Why do I say that?
Yeah.
I've been around the whole country.
Yeah.
I'm the secretary treasurer of our international.
Yes.
And everyone looks up to the Chicago labor movement. Within our international, they look up to Local 150. The same thing happens with the carpenters and electricians. We're more active. We think outside the box. We never take no for an answer. And we fight until the end.
And that's why the market share here is stronger than anywhere else.
It's the best market share. New York on Manhattan Island is a disaster.
Yes.
Is a disaster in market share. It's probably around 40%.
And when you say market share, for everybody that's listening, explain what market share
is. So the amount of work that is actually being built union.
Yes.
Where here it is virtually 90, in a 90 percentile.
Right.
Is in the 40 percentile on Manhattan Island alone. Get off the island, it's worse.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, why did that happen?
Yeah.
Because
Not just New York, but everywhere.
They forgot about organizing.
Yeah.
They wanted clubs instead of unions.
Right.
And organizing the unorganized was alien to them. I mean, I was hired as the first organizer of the operating engineers. Think about that. At that point, we hadn't had an organizer since the 30s.
Because we were a service model, right?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, you bring too many guys in, I might be out of work. I don't want to bring that guy in. Don't bring him in the union. Just make him leave.
Right.
You know, that was the attitude.
And then they hired you, and you were the first organizer.
Correct.
And your job was to go organize the unorganized.
Yeah. And whereas my dad said, what are you going to go, sell cards? Oh, Dad.
How dare you, Dad?
How did that work out? Organizing the unorganized, how did...
Went from 9,000 members to 24,000 today. And
you imagine
We did it during the Reagan administration.
Yeah.
Some of our biggest units were organized at that point.
When everybody else was going down.
Yeah.
Right.
during all around the country.
Two recessions or depressions,
right? During the PATCO era, during the union busting era, during the when unions had the lowest, you know, approval rate in the world. Well, not like today, but
today, today is exceptional organizing environment with the administration that we have. Whatever you think of Joe Biden, that administration has done more for labor than anyone since the Roosevelt administration in this country.
Yeah.
And they've set the table for even continual growth 10 years from now, if you pay attention to what's going on. And there's never been a better time to organize. I could easily retire, and I wouldn't, effing away would I retire with the ability and the environment to organize like we can right now.
Yeah.
It virtually at our will, and the non-union that are out there, if we can't get the whole company to come, we steal their best guys and we bring them, put them in a union.
Good.
And cripple the non-union. And that's what you need to do right now. Have no mercy. That's what they would do to us and have done to us over years.
Of course. Yeah. And our foot is on the pedal right now. Uh-huh. And we can't take it off, right? And
not
people will be complacent and go, oh, my God, we have so much work. And look at all this work we have. And, you know, we got to service all these new members and, you know, whatever it is. Now is the absolute time to press down your foot, right? And put the kind of
never been
neck.
A better time. You've got a Department of Labor, you've got a National Labor Relations Board, and all we really need them to do is stay out of the way.
Absolutely.
Did I say
absolutely
that? Mm-hmm.
You can say
it. Sorry about that. Beep. There it goes. I see the pen. There it goes. It is a kid.
Hey, listen, I've been doing this for a year and a half, and he comes on the radio once and he curses, so how do you like that?
Oh, you were the you're the worst.
I was.
You should hear what we say when you're off mic.
I know. Yeah. But you're right, right? So it's just like, hey, stay out of the way, let us do our thing, and, you know, we...
All I'm preaching, Ken, anywhere I go for the international, is organize now.
Right.
Organize
now.
There's never been a better time. People want unions.
Yes.
People love unions.
Yes.
Our favorabilities are in the 70%.
Imagine that.
70%.
Right.
There's a reason why we started our Fight Back Fund. We raised $4 million a year to pump into pro-union messaging out there to continue to bring it up and to continue to organize.
So what does that mean?
We've never had more organizers than now, and I'm looking to hire more.
Explain the Fight Back Fund, Jim.
The Fight Back Fund was a request that I made of the membership. I sent out a letter with a ballot, and I said, if you guys would please mail these back and tell me, you know, by saying yes to a dues increase of a percent that we would use for not only organizing, but also with a long-term goal of passing a constitutional amendment that would outlaw right to work. By slowly getting that message up, getting that percentiles up, just pounding it any which way we could with that final goal. And we as a labor movement have reached it. You know, we're the only place in the country where you have a workers' rights amendment that outlaws right to work.
Enshrined in the Constitution.
Enshrined in the Constitution. And enshrined in the Constitution, there's things that are helping everybody from the FOP to the teachers and to others to have the right to join unions.
That's right. So if you remember when we first started the Workers' Mic, it was our first topic, right? It was,
sure, absolutely.
It was before the vote.
Yeah.
And this was an off election year. And people are like, oh, you know, and what did the AFL do? The AFL-CIO, what did they do for us? Nothing. Literally nothing. It happened right here in Chicago. It was organic. It was the building
trades.
People
didn't want us to do it.
They
didn't
want us to take the chance. They thought we were going to lose.
Right.
And in turn,
what are you doing?
Not only did this constitutional amendment pass, but if you looked afterwards,
every county, right?
Every single county in the Illinois, which is close to 100, and deep red southern Illinois that votes nothing but Republican, 80%+ Trump, voted in favor of the workers' rights
amendment. And we knew that was going to occur because we saw that happening. That data was there from the Missouri campaign that was run roughly, I think, Eddie, what, about a year before that?
It was a
couple years before that. And we took that as that message. In deep red counties in Missouri, in western Missouri, they voted for the union.
And then
next to that union, pro-union sign was a Trump sign. So they told you.
Right.
Unions are bigger than politics.
Yes.
And you take the guns out of it, and you take the race out of it, and the social issues and things like that. Union members are workers, not union members. Remember, this has to pass by everybody, not just union members.
Not just the members.
Right? And it passed.
And not a simple majority either.
Right. Supermajority. Right?
Yeah.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
And so now you're seeing other states like Michigan just overturned right to work. It was the first state to overturn it in 60 years.
Yep.
Right? And so Pennsylvania is thinking about putting one of these constitutional.
New Hampshire just fought it off again.
New Hampshire. Yeah. And now, you know, there's a sea change right now.
But that was the problem. That's the problem with some in labor is that they wait until we're being attacked.
Right.
Then they're going to rally
reactive.
The troops and fight it.
Defense.
And our whole idea was get on the offense. Sorry again, Aaron.
That's twice.
Get on.
Ben's good with the button.
I told you.
Keep it up.
Hey, it's Friday, and I had a beer.
Yeah. We're not going to stop you.
You know, get on the offensive.
That's right. Get
this
on the
is
offense.
The time to attack.
Yes.
And we should continue. This should continue. There should be worker rights amendments in California, in New York,
absolutely.
On the ballot. That
absolutely.
Needs to happen. You don't sit back and relax because this is the time to organize. I keep saying it. It's not the time to relax, put your feet up on the table, and go, hey, everybody's working, all's good. No, it's not.
Right.
It's not good. Our total market share is barely 10% in this country.
Right.
We got to get that back up to what it was when, you know, even when I graduated high school. I graduated high school, nearly 70% of construction workers in the state of Texas were union.
Wow.
Wow.
Look how far we've fallen.
Right.
Yeah.
And we need to rebuild that.
Yeah.
And the way to do it is to organize.
It's the only way to do it.
It's boots on the ground.
No,
it's bottom
don't,
up.
Don't cry about how hard it is or they're going to do this and the board is going to, you know, screw us over here. Just assume all that and find a way around it. Make your plan to use them as leverage to get what you need. And we've done that as a union 150 from the very beginning because it was the only way it was going to work.
And
we tried the traditional, hey, here, get some cards signed, let's have an election, and then go and sit and negotiate for 2 years, and then they decertify the union.
Right.
No. Attack, pound them, economically hurt the company so you get what you need. All you need is that protection of saying we're certified. And take that certification and file ULPs and block the election and block whatever you want to do. And then we've just went after the company's throats. That's what you do.
Pure aggression.
So it's all they understand.
That's exactly right. That's all they understand.
And if you think this isn't war, it's war. It's economic war. It's class war.
It is class war. That's right. No war but class war, right?
Okay.
Absolutely. It's good to hear you say that. See, this is why I like this, right? Now, all of a sudden, I feel like, I don't know, throwing a brick.
Coming back?
Now we're talking.
Just don't throw any bricks in here. These people are our friends.
I don't know. Now I feel like drinking a bunch of beer and throwing
some
bricks.
There you go.
There's an H.L. Mencken quote of, sometimes you got to spit on your hands, raise a black flag, and start slitting throats.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, Phil,
yeah.
Take it easy, Phil.
Hey, like
calm
that?
Down. That really escalated very quickly.
Yeah. Phil, your boss left. Don't worry.
We mean business now.
Yeah, Phil's boss left. Everything is
little round bombs, baby. round bombs.
That's right.
That's what they understand.
So, listen, it is, and this is the type of thing, like, I thought Jim would come on here and we'd talk about, you know, some issues that are going on at the moment.
Gas pipes. Like that.
There's a ton of issues that are going on.
Some million things.
And you'll see commercials from the Fight Back Fund, correct, and things that are happening here in the city of Chicago. But bigger picture and broader brushes, you know, the unions now are exactly right. You have to fight. We like take the money that we got, right? Look what the UAW did. Take $40 million and put it into organizing in the South.
Right.
Right?
Go
organize
right
the South. Absolutely. Go right and bring,
and don't
bring
be,
the fight
don't
to
be
the
nice
government.
About it.
Why should you be nice about it? They're not
attack,
nice to us.
Man.
That's exactly
they,
right.
The UAW is taking now all the lessons they learned from getting nowhere.
That's right.
And doing the opposite.
That's right.
And it's working.
Yeah, it is working.
Right?
Yeah. So you're seeing.
And you got leadership that is dedicated to organizing.
Finally.
Not just giving it mouth service. I mean dedicated to organizing. And that's what's inspirational.
I think that's right. And I think that, you know, if you look at the building trades, right, you look at the operators and you look at the building trades, they don't give money to just Democrats, right? They're not a funnel for Democrats. We'll give money to both sides,
You're my friend.
That's right. Exactly right.
On my issues.
Yes.
Which is organizing, prevailing wage, right, protecting worker rights.
That's it.
And infrastructure. And gas pipe.
And gas pipe especially.
Gas pipe especially right now. You know, they're ticking time bombs underneath all our houses.
I saw a commercial to that effect. It was pretty persuasive.
I mean, if you want to keep drinking lead or whatever, just, you know, leave it the way it is.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Those are water pipes. People don't drink natural gas.
Just so you know, like 40% of all electricity is generated by natural gas.
So it's six and one half dozen of the other.
Wait, Germany got rid of all their nukes. Now what are they burning? Coal.
Right.
Because the Russians cut off their natural gas.
You hear that?
There we go.
Yeah, we don't want them turning to run. Here we go.
There's only one reason why we've got as carbon-free as we are in this state is because we have more nuclear power plants than any other place in the country.
Right.
So are you saying those Teslas that are driving around are 40% fuel?
Did you see those Teslas this winter when it was 13 below?
They were dead in parking lots.
People froze to death in Teslas.
They did.
They froze to death.
How many more have to die?
How
many more?
Listen.
No, I'm not. You know, I don't want to come off as being anti-climate. I am 100%. We have to do something about what's going on with the climate, but we have to think of it in a more global approach, in a way that's going to work.
Rational.
We can't cut off, for instance, like we've done at the Illinois Commerce Commission, ComEd's ability to rebuild their grid, and at the same time say we want all the houses in Chicago to be run on electricity.
Right.
How's that going to work?
It's not.
Right now, we could not supply the electricity if everybody went and got an electric car in the grid that we have.
Right.
We have to do multiple things at once, not one. Can't just say stop all natural gas or stop all coal or stop all nukes. That's not going to work. It's going to take all the tools in the toolbox to make this work. And this idea that you can just shut down the natural gas pipe replacement project, which is desperately needed here in Cook County and in the rest of the state.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Chicago's People's Gas and Nicor have been at this for 8 years. The Commerce Commission shut that project down, which is the rebuilding of the natural gas that we supply all our homes to, that is underneath all our streets, underneath our buildings, and said, we're going to study this. We don't think we need this. We don't think natural gas is going to be around in 40 or 50 years. It is going to be around. As we make that transition, it's going to take 40 or 50 years to get enough solar projects up and running, enough wind projects up and running. We do more of that work than anyone.
Right.
We're out there doing that. We're for it.
And they've already
But you've got to approach this in a way where you don't destroy the economy or put a too big of a burden on the, especially the working poor of this city.
Yeah.
A BTU of electricity costs four times more to make than a BTU of natural gas. Who's going to absorb that cost when you tell them you can't burn natural gas anymore in your house?
Right.
Come on, let's be realistic.
Yeah.
But this approach of, you know, gotcha, like it was the dog chasing the truck and finally caught the bumper, now it's standing there and doesn't know what to do.
But didn't they already do the study? I mean, isn't there a reason they started to replace all this infrastructure?
The ICC did a study 5 years ago that came back and said, yes, you need to do this. Oh, by the way, you need to do it quicker.
Right. And so we were. And right. Then they changed their mind.
Hmm?
And then they changed their mind. Right? The ICC.
It's almost like it was a political decision.
It was purely political. They went way outside their normal...
Wait, what?
Right? Yeah, can you believe that?
Yeah, I can't believe
all those guys who voted on that are appointed.
I've seen commercials about this. On TV.
And on
WGN, I think.
Some dark money commercials, huh?
Yeah. Fight Back Fund. Look it up.
Hey, Fight Back.
Listen, we got to take a break. I could do this for hours, by the way. We got to take a break. But thank you so much, Jim Sweeney, President Business Manager of Local 150. And actually,
what about the White Sox? Are we going to get a new stadium?
I don't know. Are we going to get a new stadium?
Yeah, we are.
I think we should.
Somebody shaking their head no back there. What's that, a Cub fan? Yeah, all right. You guys just got, you just asked for 30 more million for like security or something around Wrigley Field. I don't know why you need security around that place.
You see how he's talking about you, like you guys, WGN, or home of the Cubs or something like that. I don't even know what he's talking about.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Well, maybe if the White Sox would do some advertising on this show.
Just shake them.
Hey, that's a union brother over there.
That's right.
It's just for you know. Listen, we want to knock down any stadium that we can so we can rebuild it, correct?
Sure.
But, you know, we only owe $17 million on the old place still.
Is that right?
Which surprised me. So economically, this can be done and make sense. It would be a good project, I think, to start up again what we need here in the city. Right now, we're down to about 3 tower cranes. This city had 63 tower cranes up and running before the pandemic.
Absolutely.
We've got to shake it up. We're in a bit of a slump.
Yeah, in terms of like or high rises and things
It takes years to get a project to start, and there's nothing in the pipelines right now. Nothing.
Yeah. What's it going to take to start that pipeline?
It's going to take we need to be a little more pro business when it comes to development in this city.
Yeah, create safety for people to develop in the loop.
they have to be assured that the math works when you build a building and you're going to rent it out or you're going to sell the building, and that means you got to know what your taxes are going to be. You've got to know, you know, whether or not you could use natural gas to heat your building, or you've got to do it with electric. And if I got to do it with electric and it costs four times more and it's mandated to me, you've got a problem.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, we've solved all the problems of Chicagoland today, and we appreciate it.
We will solve them at the bar in the next two or three hours, in case anybody's interested, over in the far corner.
Jim is buying, just for the record.
Whoa!
Listen, thank you so much, Jim Sweeney. And I forget to mention that you were recently elected to the number two spot of the entire International Union of Operating Engineers, both in Canada and the United States.
Aren't they crazy?
I can't believe they actually elected you.
Get in line.
But that's pretty cool. So kudos to you. Congratulations on that. That's pretty badass. But we got to take a quick break. We will be back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor. I'm Ken Edwards. Hey, that was, obviously I can listen to Jim Sweeney talk for a very long time because he's fascinating. He is always out ahead of, most others. Not to say he's the be-all and end-all for labor, but he certainly is a big part of it here in Chicago. And in Chicago, you have, what we consider the birthplace of labor, and a movement that is really encapsulated by what Jim was just saying, that it's time for us to push, and now is the time to push, by the way. Why wouldn't you do it when things are going well? So it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. I'm going to move to something that was sent to me by one of our listeners, and I'm going to give a shout out to Mary Ann C., who's a fan of the show, and every once in a while she sends me articles that she thinks I will be interested in, and to an article I am interested in everything she sends. But this one I thought was fascinating. It was a story in the I think it was In These Times. It's a magazine called In These Times. And, it's a lefty publication. It is what it is. But it talked about labor journalism. And as we lose reporters and as newspapers shrink and as the media starts to shift and change, or I shouldn't even say starts, it's already happening and has happened and continues to happen. But as it shrinks, you lose the ability to get your message out there. Because there used to be labor reporters in every city, right? It was a beat, just like a crime beat or an entertainment or restaurants. There was a labor beat, and labor beat were reporters that would go out and cover labor issues. So what this article said was this, that as these newspapers get swallowed by, venture capital or anti-worker companies or things like that you're starting to lose labor reporters. And it's interesting, if you look around, there are not many left. And the article went on to talk about why that's bad. And obviously why that's bad is because if you're trying to put public pressure on whatever it is, let's just use Starbucks as an example, right? Putting public pressure on a giant corporation like Starbucks entails having a media strategy. Part of that media strategy, obviously, is getting journalists to report on what's going on. So it was I thought it was interesting. It made sense to me. And, he didn't just have, didn't just identify, I think it was Hamilton Nolan, I think it was the author, I could be wrong. But it wasn't just like, here, I'm going to identify a problem and then I'm going to walk away from it. What he suggested and makes sense was, hey, labor, buy a newspaper. Fund some reporting, do whatever it takes to fill that gap that is shrinking, is going away. Because if you don't, you're going to sort of circle your own demise. And it made sense to me, right? Why wouldn't labor, especially when we're in an upswing, right, organizing and, you know, dues coming in and more work, why wouldn't labor, you know, buy a newspaper? You know, here in Chicago, we did it years ago when the Sun-Times was about to go under. A bunch of unions and the Chicago Federation of Labor got together and bought the Sun-Times just to keep this thing afloat, because it was at that point the only voice for working people in Chicago. And it worked. It kept it afloat. It still exists today. But take that model and maybe do it on a national level, right? Buy a paper. Buy something that's already in existence. Create a new one. Create a channel, you know, do what we're doing here on the Workers' Mic and you know, with WGN giving us a voice to talk to, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of people about working issues. You know, maybe labor can get on Sirius XM, you know, have a television station. You know, there are shows like, you know, Union Outdoorsman and things like that. Maybe there's a spot where we all land and talk about labor issues, because if you look, there's a thing called the Labor Radio Network, I want to say, but it's sort of a place where everybody lands. But if you look at it, there's 200,000 podcasts and, you know, tiny radio shows and things like that. And nothing wrong with that. It's great. But, you know, maybe it's time that there is one voice, or maybe a couple of voices, I guess. I don't know. But I thought it was interesting. If you get a chance, go to In These Times, read the article. It is, it's really pretty prescient, if you will. Another thing that I have been reading about, and I'm sure that you all have been feeling the effects of this. There was a meme or a video on I think it was TikTok or something like that, that showed like somebody went to a burger chain and got a hamburger, small fries, and a soda. And with tax and whatnot, it was like $26. That's it for that. You know, multiply that by a family of four, you just spent $100 on cheeseburgers. And it's this outrageous, and I mean outrageous, corporate greed that's driving this. It's not the price of hamburgers went up. It's not the price of a cow went up. You know, they try and feed that to us like, oh, everything's getting more expensive. And when reality, that's actually not true. What's happening is during COVID, you know, this is my opinion, of course, during COVID, companies realized that the sky was the limit in terms of prices and what they could do and how low they could go in terms of their products and how small the products can get while charging more money. So everything is more expensive now. And there's no question about it that it like I can see it just by going out and spending money. It things are more expensive. But there's two names for it. One is called greedflation, and that is the corporations literally are squeezing, realizing that, you know, if they're the only game in town for, you know, soda, they can charge more for it, right? And then there's something else called shrinkflation, which I didn't even know was a thing, but I learned it. And you know where I learned it? I learned it from Cookie Monster. That's right, Cookie Monster from the great Sesame Street, right? So we've talked about Elmo checking in with people, and everybody's like, oh, we're bummed out, Elmo. Well, now Cookie Monster chimed in and said, me cookie's getting smaller. That's what he said. I guess he's got a Twitter or something like that. And so he says this thing, and it turns out that people start chiming in, you know, like the former Secretary of Labor, Robert Rex, chimes in and says, yeah, Gatorade is now 12% smaller. Doritos are 5% smaller. C is no longer for cookies. C is for corporate greed. So, you know, it is amazing to me, like you go to these dollar stores or whatever, and you think, oh, my God, I'm getting a bargain. Everything's a dollar. When in fact, you know, by the ounce or whatever, it's actually more expensive than just going to a regular store because you're getting less product, blah, blah, blah. It's outrageous. And, you know, once again, can the government do anything about it? I don't know, because when you have so much money in politics and so many dollars going towards, you know, special interests and people that would, you know, hurt the working class and the middle class and the lower class, it's really difficult, right, to get any kind of movement whatsoever. So, you know, with that, I will say that we need to either, you know, pick a company and punish them, right? You know, look what happened to Bud Light, right? They got on the wrong side of an issue and they got punished. Well, why can't workers do the same thing? Pick somebody and go, you continue to do this to us, we're not going to buy, you know, for example, Doritos, we're going to buy potato chips or whatever, something like that. But we have this collective power and we don't use it, I don't think, in a way that we could and should. And part of the reason is because there's really, I think there's a, you know, this is going to maybe cost me my job, but I think there's a void in leadership in the labor movement. You know, the AFL-CIO has, I don't know, if for whatever it's worth, it seems to me that they simply become a money funnel to the Democratic Party for politics and nothing else. And, you know, they got splintered, and then, you know, the Carpenters are left, and the Teamsters and SEIU and other unions have formed their own AFL-CIO called Change to Win. And then you have, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of teachers and cops and firefighters. Actually, I shouldn't say firefighters. I have teachers and cops for sure that are not part of the AFL-CIO. So it's just the splintering and continued, you know, divide and conquer, death by a thousand cuts. That if somebody would step up and take control, take the reins of the labor movement, with that happy, ending, if you will, no pun intended. That's it today for the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. We will be back next week. But listen, one quick reminder, and that is it's St. Patrick's Day parade weekend, and I'd be remiss to not point out that there is a wonderful parade on Archer Avenue called the Working Families Parade, and the money goes to charity to protect the vest. So for fallen police officers and things of the like, you can find more information about it by looking up the Archer Avenue Parade on Facebook, Working Families Parade. But I think it kicks off around 11, and it's really fun. It's a really good time. It's not a million hours. The Workers' Mic are going to be there marching with our banner and throwing out some T-shirts and stuff like that. So join us. We'll see you next week right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of the Workers' Mic was powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial. For additional information and podcasts of the Workers' Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.